Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Questions by the Sages, Text Number 5. Ta ekata tu munayo. It should be munaya. Pratta hukta hudagnayaha. Satkritam satamasinam.
Satkritam satamasinam.
Rapratshur idam adarat.
Rapratshur idam adarat.
Te.
The sages.
Ekada.
Ekada.
One day.
Two.
But.
Munayaha.
Sages.
Prataha.
Morning.
Morning.
Huta.
Huta.
Burning.
Burning.
Huta agnayaha.
Huta agnayaha.
The sacrificial fire.
Satkritam. Satkritam.
Due respects.
Due respects.
Sutam.
Sutam.
Sri Suta Goswami.
Asinam.
Asinam. Seated on.
Seated on.
Papachuhu.
Papachuhu.
Made inquiries.
Made inquiries.
Idam.
Idam.
On this.
On this.
As follows.
As
Adarat.
Adarat.
With due regards.
With due regards.
One day after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Suta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. Report. Morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. The great sages offer the speaker of the Bhagavatam an elevated seat of respect called the Vyasasan, or the seat of Sri Vyasadeva. Sri Vyasadeva is the original spiritual preceptor for all men, and all other preceptors are considered to be his representatives. A representative is one who can exactly present the viewpoint of Sri Vyasadeva. Sri Vyasadeva impregnated the message of Bhagavatam unto Srila Sukadeva Goswami, and Sri Suta Goswami heard it from him. Sri Sukadeva Goswami. All bona fide representatives of Sri Vyasadeva in the chain of disciplic succession are to be understood to be Goswamis. These Goswamis restrain all their senses and they stick to their path made by the previous acharyas. The Goswamis do not deliver lectures on the Bhagavatam capriciously. Rather, they execute their services most carefully, following their predecessors who delivered the spiritual message unbroken to them. Those who listen to the Bhagavatam may put questions to the speaker in order to elicit the clear meaning, but this should not be done in a challenging spirit. One must submit questions with a great regard for the speaker and the subject matter. This is also the way recommended in Bhagavad Gita. One must learn the transcendental subject by submissive oral reception from the right sources. Therefore, these sages address the speaker, Suta Goswami, with great respect. Om Agyana Timivandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam rupa kadamahayam dadati svapadantikam mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate gurim yat kripa tamaham bande sri gurum dinatarinam. Interesting. So Prabhupada says here, morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. the Vedic injunction is Tamasi Ma Jyotirgamaha. Let's leave ignorance and come to the light of transcendental knowledge. And so we are recommended to take the spiritual life in order to get out of ignorance. Prabhupada consistently presents how most of us are we're in the human form of life, but despite the fact that we're in the human form of life, we're still behaving like animals. If we look at the behaviour of the animals and we look at the behaviour of the human beings, then we may be a more polished edition of the animals, but basically eating, sleeping, mating and defending. The animals do it, we do it, and not a lot of difference between the two. But of course, the Vedas teach us that there's more to life than simply pursuing objects of the senses, pursuing sense gratification. That we have a higher status or a higher position that we should aspire to. And that's the spirit that we should aspire to, understanding our spiritual identity. And so therefore, the Vedic literature and the practices that are contained within give us processes by which we can be elevated out of a gross material conception of existence, a gross material conception of who we are, to the point of understanding that actually we're not the body, that we're spirit soul, that we're spiritual by nature, that we have a relationship with God, that God exists, which is for most people in this day and age, that's a concept very difficult to approach. The fact that God actually exists. What speak of God exists and is a person? That's just bizarre for most people. As far as most people are concerned, God is dead or never existed. There's very little relationship. So this is darkness, this is ignorance, according to the Vedic conception or perspective. And so life is not meant to be, according to the Vedic understanding, life is not meant to be squandered purely, just simply pursuing materialistic goals, but rather, not that these things should be neglected, but rather emphasis should be placed on making progress in one's spiritual life. And so we find in the Vedas, in the Shruti and in the Smriti, various methods for gradually elevating a person. The root of material existence is our association with the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion and ignorance. As Dave Mehta Maharaj was mentioning the other day, in this day and age, basically there's really only two modes of material nature. That's passion and ignorance. Goodness is conspicuous by its absence in Kali. So the Vedic system or the Vedic process is to gradually elevate people out of the mode of ignorance, elevate them. The mode of passion is actually elevated compared to the mode of ignorance. But the mode of goodness is the springboard or the platform from which one can come to a pure understanding of spiritual existence. And so the Vedic literature and the teachings of the acharyas and rishis and sages is designed in such a way to gradually bring people out of this out of the influence of the modes of material nature, passion and ignorance, bring them to the mode of goodness, and then from the mode of goodness to the spiritual platform. Because as Banaswami was explaining the other day, the gradual process is not practical in this day and age. Gradually bringing people to the mode of, you know, out of the mode of ignorance into the mode of passion, then into the mode of goodness is not. You know, this really depends very much on the Varnashram system. The Varnashram system in this day and age, Prabhupada mentions, even Lord Chaitanya mentions, very, very difficult to implement. And so therefore, Vyasadeva has compiled really the essence of the Vedas into the Bhagavatam. And of course the Bhagavatam brings us immediately to the point that ultimately we need to worship Krishna. And of course, you know, we can see that in Srila Prabhupada's presentation of spiritual life, of devotional practice. He directly connects us. The process of bhakti basically directly connects us with Krishna. The Bhagavatam directly connects us with the Supreme Personality of Godhead without going through too many gradual stages or gradual steps. And so you can see the Krishna consciousness and ISKCON, or the Krishna consciousness movement, is designed basically to bring everybody immediately connected to Krishna. Right? And so we find within our practice of devotional service, within our practice of elevation out of ignorance and into tamasya gama, out of darkness and jyotya gama, into the light, we're recommended to follow certain practices, and those practices are recommended most effective if performed in the morning. Right? So therefore Prabhupada recommends, you know, rise early before the Brahma Muhurta, and then take advantage of that time of the day to solidly ground our consciousness, or solidly situate our consciousness in a spiritual perspective rather than a material perspective. Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book, in the what was the book? What's the name of the book that Prabhupada wrote specifically on the description of the autumn, the season of autumn? Light of the Bhagavad, right? Isn't it? Yeah. So in there, Prabhupada, there's one verse that Prabhupada purports where he says that usually the students in the ashram don't wake voluntarily before the Brahma Muhurta. And so therefore in the institution or in the ashram there's a bell or some music is played, or, you know, there's some. I remember when I joined the ashram, when I joined the temple, the Brahmacharya ashram was upstairs where we now have the Prasadam hall. This is where we lived, and Korma's room was around about there. Down the end was one long room. That's where the Sankirtan party slept. And there was about six or eight of us at any one time. We all slept in a row alongside each other. And in Korma had his own room. And I don't know what the time was. At about must have been 3:45, I think. He had a timer on his It wasn't a CD player, it was a tape player in those days. And then at 3:45 in the morning, the Sadgoswami Ashtak would start playing. You know, the one with the sitar? And then Prabhupada would start singing, Krishna Kirtana Gana Natana Paro. Wake up to the clarion call. So Prabhupada mentions actually just so similarly the acharya, just as the guru calls the residents of the ashram to action before the Brahma Muhuta, to wake up, arise and to start their spiritual practice. So similarly also the acharya comes, and his call is to everybody, come and study the Vedas, come and hear the message of the Bhagavad. And of course that's best. Actually, these processes are potent at any time. Actually, in the Bhagavad Gita, there are many statements where it says, if you recite this description of the pastimes of Bali Maharaj or the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj or whatever, in the morning and in the evening, I think it says the story of Bali Maharaj, then you'll never face defeat, as an example. So spiritual practice is potent really at any time, especially the chanting of Hare Krishna when we chant the Tisastakam. You know, it says there are no hard and fast rules for chanting Hare Krishna, but the chanting of Hare Krishna has special potency. In fact, any practice is endowed with special potency if it's performed early in the morning. And of course, we perform this devotional service early in the morning so that we can focus, so that our focus is firmly fixed on what? Krishna. Savai mana Krishna padara nindayo. The different qualities of Maharaj Ambarisha described in the Bhagavatam. The first one, that he focused his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Or, as Prabhupada says, on the lotus feet of Krishna or Krishna's service. Same thing. So early in the morning, we rise. You know, our practice of devotional service rests on two tracks. Prabhupada says, there's the Bhagavad-vidhi, which is basically the hearing and chanting process, and then there's the Pancharatriki-vidhi, which is the worship of the deity. And the two are, Prabhupada describes, like the railway lines on a railway track. They keep us on target. They keep us going in the right direction. And so both are emphasized. The Bhagavad Vidhi is basically the path of preaching. And the Pancharatriki Vidhi is the worship of the deity in the temple. Or worship of the deity at home, wherever. But the two need to be placed side by side, because whilst the Bhagavad Vidhi may be somewhat more spontaneous, we need the regulation and the order, the structure, the schedule, if you like, that comes with the Pancharatriki Vidhi. There needs to be some structure. So we see in our daily, especially in the temple, you know, the temple is like the flagship for the community. We see in the temple how Prabhupada set it up. Rise early, take bath, put tilak on, put fresh clothes on, come for Mangalati. Here in this description, the sages have performed their huta agnayaha, their fire sacrifice. This is recommended for the brahmacharis, especially sacrifice. But of course, sacrifice is good for everybody. It's also one of the the duties of the householders. And whilst the sages were performing their fire sacrifice, what's the recommended sacrifice for this day and age? Chanting Hare Krishna. So after Mangalati, what do? We perform our sacrifice, our hutta, if you like, by sitting down. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is our jagya. So it's basically the same thing. Then back to the deity again. We worship the deity at greeting the deities. Then after greeting the deities, we do more or less what the sages are doing here. We sit down and we hear the Bhagavatam. There's also sacrificing our hearing, sacrificing our intellectual stimulation. Instead of thinking about what the state of the stock market is or who's going to win a football on the weekend and thinking about these things, where's the latest turmoil in the world, which is what you're faced with when you open up the newspaper in the morning, which is the mental stimulation for most people when they rise in the morning. Look at the paper. We sacrifice that tendency to hear, instead of hearing about the mundane pursuits of others, we hear about the transcendental pursuits of the saints and sages and the rishis and the devotees of yore. So these things are best done in the morning, at the beginning of the day, but it can be done at any time. And Prabhupada recommends actually in the morning and in the evening, so that we then have a solid basis on which to build our Krishna consciousness. So that's the first point. Morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. Now, next item, what do the sages do? What do they do? Or what are they doing? What is it described here? They offer a seat of esteem, it mentions here. Now, I can't remember that being in the... But I guess it is. I can't remember that being in the... Oh yeah, it is. So, the seat of Vyasadeva is called the Vyasasan. And because Vyasadeva is the original spiritual preceptor, then that seat represents the the learning, the position, the elevation, the spiritual advancement, the spiritual practice of the Vyasadeva. It's actually not to be taken lightly. In fact, I probably shouldn't even be sitting on this seat when I think about it. Considering the elevation of the Vyasadeva. How, a Vyasadeva is an incarnation of the Lord. And his business is to distribute transcendental knowledge. Not only to distribute transcendental knowledge, but to demonstrate or to act, to act in such a way so as to be the emblem of spiritual practice and spiritual knowledge. So to offer somebody the asasana is to respect the spiritual practice and the spiritual advancement of that person. What to speak of for the person who's sitting on the asasana, it's a heavy responsibility, because one has to present the knowledge of Vyasadeva, to present the knowledge of the Vedas, to present the knowledge and practice of spiritual life faithfully. This is a symptom of an acharya, is one who teaches by example, but he's selected as a representative of the Vyasadeva because of his faithfulness to the sampradaya, what Prabhupada calls the acharya sampradaya. Following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, but not just a parrot, if you like, or somebody who mimics or repeats in a parrot-like fashion, but rather somebody who is able to take the essence of the instruction, inquire about it, understand it inside, outside, and then put it into practice, and then be able to apply it in the lives of others. This is really an acharya, one who teaches by example, but who knows how to take the principles, the essence of the Vedas, and then apply them appropriately according to kala, desha and patra, time, place and circumstance. This is a heavy responsibility and a representative of Vyasadeva is given respect, and here the word is esteem, right? Offering a seat of esteem. So the saints, the rishis, munis mentions here, they recognized the elevated status of Suta Goswami. And so, as is appropriate to his status, they offered him an elevated seat. And then, what did they do? What did they do? It's in the translation. Huh? No. It says here, they made inquiries. What's the name of this chapter? Questions by the sages. Atato, what is it? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now we've come to the human form of life. It is time to make inquiries. But as I mentioned before, not just, you know, where can I get something to eat? Where can I get a job? Where can I get some shelter? Where can I get some sense gratification? Who am I? What am I doing here? What is the purpose of existence? This is the real kind of questions that should be asked. Not just, you know, the questions that you can hear the animals asking, and when the birds wake up in the morning you can hear the magpie warbling, questioning, where's there something to eat? Dank Street used to be a crow street, but it's now become a magpie street. I don't know if you noticed. You don't hear the crows. The crows got chased away by the magpies. So Actually, isn't it? Everybody's getting chased by the magpies at the moment, if you follow the football. I just happened to find that out. Questions. Now, Prabhupada wrote the book, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. So, the sages at Naimisharanya, recognizing Sudha Goswami, and why is Sudha Goswami important? Because Sudha Goswami heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from Sugadev Goswami. And who did Sugadev Goswami hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from? Vyasadev. So, very close connection to the original spiritual preceptor. And so therefore he's given the seat of Vyasadev. Prabhupada mentions that the persons who follow Vyasadev and who speak the message of Vyasadev are Goswamis. Right? And so therefore, as Goswamis, they deliver the message of Vyasadeva, or they deliver, in our case, deliver the message of the Bhagavatam, or deliver the message of the Bhagavad Gita, in a very measured, deliberate, careful presentation. What is the word that Prabhupada uses here? He says, the Goswamis restrain all their senses and they stick to the path made by the previous acharyas. This is it. This is instructional for us. The Goswamis do not deliver lectures on the Bhagavatam capriciously. What does the word capriciously mean? Capricious. If you're being capricious, what does that mean? Whimsical, yes. Whimsical. What is Prabhupada's... In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions that capriciousness and whimsical is a symptom of which mode of material nature? Passion. Oh, I feel like doing this. Oh, yeah, okay. Let's just do it. But the Goswamis are restrained. Right? In other words, a person who controls the senses. Goswami means master of the senses. Most people, Prabhupada mentions, previous acharyas mentions, are godas. Right? If the senses pull us in a particular direction, then what happens? That's off. That's the direction that we go. But a Goswami is a person who restrains the senses. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam. Etam vegam yovisha heta dira savam apimim prativim sasisyat. Such a person, Rupa Goswami says in the Upadeshamrita, a person who can control the senses, and effectively controlling the senses means what? In Prabhupada's explanation of the first verse of the Nectar of Instruction. What does it mean to control the senses effectively? Anybody know? Yes. Engage one's senses in Krishna's service. So, Prabhupada quotes Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur in the purport, and he mentions there are three urges, three main types of urges. There's the urge to speak, there's the mind's demands, subtle pushings, and the gross bodily requirements, tongue, belly, genitals. And each of these can be controlled when they're utilized in devotional activities. You know, for the yogis, the jnanis, the ascetics, The yoga practice is very much one of abstention, restriction, restraint. And you know, it's a difficult process, very difficult actually. But the process of devotional service is yukta vairagya. It means taking our natural propensities. Everybody likes to talk, right? Who doesn't like to talk? But instead of talking about ourselves, we're recommended to talk about Krishna. We like to hear topics about others. So, hear the topics about Krishna rather than hearing mundane topics, sports, business, etc. We hear topics and speak about topics in relationship to Krishna. In that way, our hearing and speaking propensities are purified. You know, rather than just artificially saying nothing and thinking all sorts of nonsense, better to chant Hare Krishna. Again, why we rise early in the morning. To engage the senses positively. You know, the devotees had a double-decker bus in the 70s. And the Sankirtan party used to travel around. And on the side of it, it said, the Hare Krishna movement, the positive alternative. Prabhupada liked that. So, you know, that's it. We, rather than negate and restrain, we engage our natural propensity to speak and hear, to eat, to act. We engage that in devotional service. That's the activities of the Goswamis. And of course that's our process also. You know, in the morning for Mangal Aarti, we get some hints on what we should be doing throughout the day. What does the second verse describe in the Gurvastikam? What? Yes. I can't even remember the verse now. Mahaprabhu Kirtana Nitya Gita. Dancing and chanting. Huh? What's the next verse described? Sri Vigrahara Dhana Nityanana. Sringara Tan Mangira Marjanado. What's Marjanado? Beginning with cleaning. Right? Beginning with cleaning. He worshipped the deities. Sringara means the clothes. We dress the deities. This is what the spiritual master is doing. He's engaging in Sankirtan. He's worshipping the deities. Just in case, you know, sometimes devotees think, oh, we've got to do all of this service. But if we read the Gurvastika prayers, this is what the spiritual master is doing. What's the next thing? Chaturvidha Sri Bhagavat Prasada. This is the bit that we usually like. We can hardly wait for the morning program to be over so we could go to breakfast. Nobody falls asleep in breakfast, right? You fall asleep in Mongol Arctic. That's what I remember for the first few months that I was in the temple. I used to fall asleep in the prayers before Tulsi, you know. After the Nisringa prayers, and you bow down and say the Tulsi present. Everybody else would be standing up in the room. I better stand up now. So tired, I was thinking, do I have to do this for the rest of my life? We're going to be perpetually tired. The cure for sleeplessness is to go to bed early. That's the cure. got to get to bed early. So anyway, if we look at the description of the activities of the spiritual master, then we find all of these engagements for our senses. Okay? We control the urge to speak by chanting Hare Krishna and by talking about Krishna. We control the mind by thinking about Krishna, by thinking about our service. This is how we, this is, you know, Prabhupada mentions the Acharya Sampradaya for us, 16 rounds a day, following the regulated principles. You know, how do we think about Krishna 24 hours a day? Because it is recommended in the Bhagavad Gita, it is recommended in the Bhagavatam, we should be satatam kirtayantamam, we should be chanting Hare Krishna all the time. This is a bit of a dilemma for us. It definitely states in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita we should be chanting 24 hours a day. But Prabhupada says we can't chant 24 hours a day. Right? In fact, Prabhupada criticizes, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur criticizes people who make a show of chanting 24 hours a day, but secretly are meditating on sense gratification. So how do we engage mind and senses? We engage by rendering service. The spiritual master is expert, so Prabhupada designed the process for us. This is our sampradaya. Follow the regulated principles, chant 16 rounds, and then engage in Krishna's service. This is our sampradaya process, if you like. We are recommended to chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day, but very, very difficult in this day and age. But it's not difficult to engage the mind and the senses in Krishna's service. And so therefore we have so many engagements. And that's for our purification. And that's how we become Goswamis. That's how we become controllers or masters of the senses, is by engaging the senses in Krishna's service. Thinking of devotional service is the same, Prabhupada says, as thinking of Krishna's lotus feet. We shouldn't think otherwise. Otherwise, if we do, then our consciousness has become contaminated by some mundane understanding and appreciation of devotional service. We should be very careful to avoid that kind of mentality where we see our service as some kind of chore to avoid, or we don't do it with full enthusiasm and just cut corners. That's not Krishna consciousness. That's some influence of mundane consciousness, mentality. So, performing sankirtan, worshipping the deities, cooking and distributing prasadam, distributing books, distributing transcendental knowledge, inducing others to become Krishna conscious, which is our preaching, our outreach, if you like, that's all part of this process of the Goswamis. And it is done in a very deliberate fashion. It is done in a systematic fashion. It is done in a almost pedantic fashion, in one sense. Therefore, this adherence to and this obedience to and this deference to the sampradaya and to the teachings of the previous acharyas, and why the person who sits on the Vyasasan has to be qualified in that they're faithful to the tradition, they're faithful to the message of the Vyasadeva, and why they're given respect. You know, that position of Goswami is not easily achieved or attained. Actually, it's fairly easily attained. If we follow the instructions, if we follow the directions of the spiritual master. You know, Prabhupada mentions here, those who listen to the Bhagavatam may put questions to the speaker in order to elicit the clear meaning. One must submit questions with a great regard for the speaker and the subject matter. This is also the way recommended in Bhagavad Gita. One becomes a Goswami by following the order of the spiritual master effectively. This is the methodology of the Bhagavad Gita. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadeksyanti te janam jnaninas tattva darshanaha. If one wants to know the truth, then one has to inquire from somebody who knows the truth. That's why this parampara system, or this sampradaya system, this system of following Vyasadeva is so important. But as I mentioned before, it can't be done, it's not a mechanical process. It has to be done with some sort of sensitivity. There has to be an understanding of the principles, but understanding of the principles is gyan. But there has to be vidyan, or a knowledge of application. Right? It's desirable to know your times tables. Right? And all of us did our times tables at school. I hope. I assume. Right? And we learn the times tables like parrots, basically. 1 times 2 is 2, 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 3 is 6. Did you do that in primary school? Do they still do that at primary school? Yeah, good. That's a relief. You know, so there's a certain amount of rote learning, but, you know, you apply your times tables when you go to the shop and you start purchasing things. I have 3 of those, 4 of this, 2 of this is $1.55 each. Then you have to start applying the times tables. How to add up and multiply so that, you know, you get the correct change when you leave the shop. So there's the understanding of the principles of the elementary basics, if you like, but then there's knowing how to apply. And so therefore there's this process where one approaches the spiritual master or the spiritual teacher with a desire to understand and to learn. And that process is one then gives, offers respect, or gives an elevated seat, right, to the spiritual preceptor, to the spiritual master, to the spiritual teacher. And then, so that's the respect part of it, but then one inquires. And of course, the inquiry has to be, you know, how do I apply these principles that I'm hearing? How do I apply them practically in my life so that I can make spiritual progress? So I can come to this level of understanding that I'm not the body, that I'm spiritual by nature, that I'm a servant of Krishna, and that I should do something practical to perfect my life. You know, Prabhupada says we're not armchair theorists or philosophers, but we're practical doers. So one becomes a Goswami by this process of approaching the spiritual master, Prabhupada. This is, in that verse, there's some interesting One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender. And one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. What does it mean to be a menial servant? When you think about it, what does that mean to be a menial servant?
Labourer.
Huh? Labourer. Yeah, why not? Labourer. Menial.
Do anything.
And do you complain about it? Oh, no, what am I going to do that for? Why me? Why can't you get somebody else to do it? Not easy. You know, to be a Goswami, it's easy. In one sense, it's easy, but it's not easy. It's easy if we are prepared to be a menial servant and to follow the instructions. But actually doing that, is it easy? Who likes being told what to do? Please raise your hands. No. Nobody likes to be told what to do. Who do you think you are? And that's why we're in the material world. We don't want to be told what to do by anybody. Even we make a show of spiritual, but you know, in the core of the heart, there's still this rebelliousness. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. Even if we're coming submissively. So there's more to it than just offering a seat or giving some flowers. Really has to be within the heart. You can actually go through the motions of being respectful, but then totally ignore somebody. It's possible to do that. In fact, in Indian culture, they've almost, many people have perfected the art of, you know, yes, but then do what you like. Ignore the instructions. Because, you know, being a menial servant is it's not an ordinary thing. It's not an ordinary thing. And it means that we'll be tested. So what did Prabhupada say? One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. So what does that mean? That means that there will be tests. Right? There will be tests. That there will be challenges. We tend to think of spiritual life as something that will make us all peaceful and happy. But it may not be that way. When he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. Very powerful. This is our process. Our process is not one side. Prabhupada warns, actually, in many places. You can study the Vedas. We can study the Bhagavad Gita. We can study the Bhagavatam. But unless we actually put what we learn into practice and start doing some things, we won't get the full, genuine spiritual understanding. We may have some technical understanding, but the technical understanding has to be tested in the fire of ordeal, actually. The fire of sacrifice. You know, this is the Sankirtan Yajna. Right? And unless we're prepared to sacrifice, then we won't get the genuine spiritual understanding. Just like if you go into the kitchen but don't turn on the flame, what happens? What happens?
No Sunday feast.
No Sunday feast. Yeah, exactly. No Sunday feast, no kitchery, no breakfast. Huh? You know, when the devotees in Melbourne, they asked Prabhupada, I've mentioned this story many times, but they asked Prabhupada, you know, who's the bona fide devotees? Those, the householders who are living outside, or the devotees who are living inside? There was this tension between, in those days, it was the followers of Siddha Swarup, Ananda, and Prabhupada's disciples. There was tension between them. And there was a tendency in some of the devotees living outside the temple to water down the process. So Prabhupada told the story of, you know, the it's a Gopal Bhan story, isn't it, about how the emperor offered a prize to the yogi who would sit in the river all night in the middle of winter and do his meditation. And so the yogi did it, and the emperor wasn't very pleased with the fact that he then had to give, he had to reward him with the prize. So he was looking for some way to get out of it. And then he noticed the lamp in the temple, in the shikara of the temple, the top of the temple. And he said, oh, you cheated. You took heat from that lamp. So the minister of the king, he was upset by that. And so he was looking at some way of pointing out how this was a mistake not to reward the yogi. And so one day the emperor wanted to go on a hunting expedition, and so he called for his minister to get things organized. And the minister said, yes, okay, we're organizing. So we have to have breakfast early so that we can go early. So he said, yes, we're just now cooking breakfast. But then breakfast didn't come. And so the emperor was getting upset. He said, come on, what's going on? Let's have breakfast. He said, well, we're just preparing breakfast. It's just coming. So eventually the emperor got upset and he went into the kitchen to find out what was going on. He found this tripod with the pot of khichdi right up at the ceiling and a fire down on the floor. He said, this is ridiculous. How do you expect to cook the khichdi when the pot's up there and the fire's down here? He said, well, if the yogi can get heat from the lamp in the temple, then we should be able to cook khichdi from the ceiling. So Prabhupada said, anybody who remains faithful to their practice of devotional service keeps in the fire of devotional service. If you water down the process, then it's like, you know, elevating, putting the pot. You can have the fire down here and the pot up there, but you don't actually cook anything. So if we want genuine spiritual understanding, we have to keep in the fire of devotional practice. We have to be faithful to the process. That means accepting a bona fide spiritual master. Inquiring from him or her submissively. How do I apply this principle? And then, sevaya. So there's pranipatena, means being respectful. Pariprashnena, and we have this word here in this verse, paprachur, which means make inquiries. Pariprashnena. Prashna means questions. Pariprashna means all around. Pari, you know, we have the word parikrama, which means to walk around. So we need to question the process. We need to understand the process, and we understand the process by inquiry. Not absurd inquiries, but relevant practical, you know, sometimes you find in class, you know, you're given a class and then somebody asks a question and it's completely off the topic. You sort of think, oh, what, weren't you listening to what I just said? But they're just asking a question, you know, just out of formality or something. Well, I mean, it's nice, but it's not very practical. So the inquiry has to be, of course, you know, that may be appropriate if the class has been dull and boring. But, you know, generally speaking, the speaker should be stimulating us. Then we can inquire appropriately so that it's relevant. So absurd inquiries are out or not recommended or inappropriate, not to the topic, not to the point. And then when we've heard the instructions, when we've received the proper understanding, then the next step, sevaya, putting it into practice. In other words, engaging the mind and the senses in devotional service. That's what makes a Goswami. That's what completes this process. It's an alchemical process in that we accept the spiritual master, we inquire submissively, how can I serve you? You know, was it Prabhupada? Was asked, you know, what questions did you ask your spiritual master? And he said, my only question was, how can I serve you? That's the question. Then, when we get the instruction, what was Prabhupada's instruction? What was Bhaktisiddhanta's instruction to Srila Prabhupada? He received at Radha Kund. What did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say? Whenever you get money, print books. In fact, he told Prabhupada, better that they tear down the marble off the walls of the temple. This is shocking to Prabhupada. Tear down, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had worked so hard to establish temples, and yet here he was saying better to take down the marble and sell it and print books, because he was disgusted with the material mentality of his disciples who were squabbling over who was going to have which room in the mandir. So Prabhupada took that instruction to heart. Of course, Prabhupada opened temples and, you know, so many, did so much more than just distribute books. But here's what happens. If we distribute knowledge of Krishna, what happens? When you distribute knowledge of Krishna, what happens? Huh?
You do get knowledge,
yes. But that's not, that's, you make devotees. Yes, you make devotees. And then what happens when you make devotees? What's that?
There'll be more good people around.
Yeah. But what do you need to do for those people? Huh?
More preaching,
yes, but you need temples. You need deities. You need activities for people so they can engage in devotional service. In other words, you create what? A society. Or you create a community. That's what happens. Inevitably, if you preach, then you'll have, if your preaching is effective, then you'll have devotees. And then you'll have to give the devotees something to do. Huh? And so therefore we have what's called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And, you know, along with that, then what comes with that? When you've got lots of people to engage in Krishna service, what does that mean? What have you got? What have I got? A headache. But
It's Krishna's service. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you know, any anxiety that I experience for you, Krishna, that's my ecstasy. Right? So, you know, we approach the spiritual master, we inquire, and we know we're going to get instructions. And we know that some of them we may not like. Is that right? Rupa Goswami warns us. Adol Guru Pad Asraya. First of all, take shelter of the Guru. Then, what? Inquire. Then, be prepared to accept some things that you wouldn't ordinarily accept, and give up some things that you would ordinarily like to keep. This is the beginning of devotional service. We have Yama and Niyama. Negative prohibitions and positive injunctions. Things to embrace, things to give up. Now when we start doing that, in that mood of service, then genuine spiritual understanding will start to come to us. Then we'll be eligible to sit on the seat of Vyasadeva and be able to speak. You know, in other words, what do we say? Practice what you preach. Or put your money where your mouth is. Isn't it? Maybe they don't say that in India, but in Australia we do. Put your money where your mouth is, mate. In other words, we have to be acharyas. It's a challenge, actually, when you think about it. When we come to Krishna consciousness, we come with all sorts of motivations. Hey, Dhruv, you have to put your head on the floor. It's not, you know, you see this is a very common thing. People come in and they just touch the floor. And I see some of the devotees do it too, you know, they come in and they touch the floor. Actually, this is surrender, right? You come in, and the kids don't like it. There's one devotee, Jehan, you know, his one young son, he hates to put his head on the floor. His dad's basically got a... And he's like... I am not going to put my head on the floor for anybody! A symptom. This is a symptom of our disease. Huh? But when we put our head on the floor, that means I accept, I surrender. Huh? You know, one of the reasons why we take our shoes off when we come into the temple is we're showing humility. We tromp around in our shoes, tread on any old thing, but when you take your shoes off, you've got to be careful how you walk. And the devotee is careful how he walks, how he talks. That's how one becomes a Goswami. By following the order of the spiritual master, and doing it very deliberately and very carefully, we control the three, you know, the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the pushings of the body. And then when we do that, despite the fact that it means we voluntarily accept austerity, we voluntarily accept difficulty. And really that's, you know, the activities of the animals, or the animal-like men, is go dust. I just follow my mind and my senses. If it feels good, do it. So it's not controlled. But the devotee, one who follows the sampradaya, voluntarily accepts the discipline. We become disciples. Disciple means discipline. We voluntarily accept the discipline. Even we know sometimes that it will be painful and it will hurt and it will make us cry. We may even lose our lives. Could you imagine that? Haridas Thakur was prepared to sacrifice his life. And Prabhupada gives an example. Jesus Christ. Prahlad Maharaj. Right? When we look at the examples of our sampradaya, it's a bit scary. It's like, ooh.
that what it means, but in one sense one has to be prepared, Prabhupada says, as if in military discipline. And if you're in the military, what does that mean? Go over the top. And you go over the top, but there's the enemy shooting bullets at you. But still got to go over the top. That's the discipline. So that's how serious it is. So one who takes the order or the instruction of the spiritual master seriously, then they're endowed with spiritual or transcendental knowledge. And they can then sit on the Vyasasan. They can receive respect, because they're not looking for respect. We receive respect on behalf of Krishna. When, you know, Prabhupada said, I'm like the tax collector who collects taxes on behalf of the king. I collect obeisances on behalf of Krishna. So the sages at Namasharanya, they recognized in Sudha Goswami a person who had pleased his spiritual master. And interesting, in this case, it doesn't say spiritual master, it says spiritual masters, plural, because very often we don't have one guru, but we have many gurus. But one who's able to please all of the devotees, especially the spiritual master, spiritual masters, and the test that they give, then they can sit on a Vyasasan and present. And they're respected as such. So that's what's going on here in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, especially, very important, that Sudha Goswami is being offered respects by the sages at Namasharanya for his spiritual acumen, learning, and for the fact that he'd passed the tests of his gurus. And so they're giving him an elevated seat in recognition of his qualification, and they're preparing to inquire from him so that they can also make spiritual progress. So this is the system. And they've finished their morning duties, they've chanted all their rounds, done all their puja, so they're ready to now inquire. So does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes.
You mentioned that the seven faith in devotional service. What are the sources of strength for a devotee to get through them?
Through the tests. That's a good question. Good prasadam. We look forward to breakfast. That was my, you know, my saving grace. I never thought of leaving the devotees, but I used to think, I don't know whether I can do this. Every morning up at 4 o'clock. And actually it was earlier, we'd be up at 3 o'clock, 3:30. And the rasgullas or the burfi was the beacon of light. The beacon of light on the horizon. I just have to get through my rounds, stay awake. It was funny, Ayodhadev and I used to entertain the devotees, because we would walk around the temple room, and what would happen is we'd fall asleep. One of us would come along and push the other one, and then the other one would fall asleep, so you come on, hey, come on. And just stand there in. There was a homeopathic doctor that we used to go and see, Dr. Von Moger.
And the Vedas would have these phases where everybody would have these homeopathic drops that they would put in their prasadam. And I went to see Dr. Van Moga, and he said to me, "What's your problem?" And I said, "I have trouble staying awake in the morning." Now, all of the devotees went to him. This was their problem. He said, "Yes, you have trouble concentrating in the morning." I said, "Yes, I do. How do you know?" All of the devotees would have the same problem. He says, "Okay, I've got the medicine for you." So, yeah, breakfast, good prasadam. But seriously, the thing that... And I was just thinking this morning when I woke up, this verse is, in one sense, is about leadership. Because, you know, to sit under Vyasa-san means that you have to be a leader. Right? And very often when I was a young devotee, and I regret this greatly, immensely, I was actually bullied by a number of people. And... or let down by people, and that hurt me a lot. And so I was very happy to have a friend, to have friends. So to have friendships amongst the devotees is one of the most valuable possessions to have. So if we can create a community of devotees where at least the basis of our relationships is friendship, right, then that will sustain us. Because I remember I was being bullied by one devotee. and I was planning to leave. I was packing up my bags and I was walking out. And there was one devotee, Ushapati, who had the nickname of Smiley, at least amongst his friends. and he found me. I was in tears at the back gate. And look, I don't think things are this bad these days. I certainly hope not. I don't find brahmacharis at the back gate crying. They may be crying in the ashram, but at least they're not at the back gate. and Ushapati, he was the bhakta leader, and he found me and he asked me what the problem was, and it was difficult for me because. For me, Anachandrarupa was because we came from Adelaide and we weren't actually preached to by the devotees in Melbourne. So we didn't have any friends here when we came. Our friends, the devotees who made us devotees, especially one devotee, Sikhi Puchadara, if it wasn't for Ushapati, I probably would have left the temple. So, in answer to your question, friendship. In fact, the devotee who was bullying me, he said to me once, he said, "Aniruddha, after all of the things I did to you, I'm surprised you didn't bloop." And he left. So, if we can at least have friends, that's so important. Then, you know, even in very difficult circumstances, and we're, you know, we're living in the material world. So there will always be huge problems and big challenges for us. And even from our friends, can you imagine? Prabhupada mentions that in social intercourse, it's like the bamboo in a forest. When the wind blows, then the bamboo rubs against itself. And then that friction creates heat. And sometimes so much heat that there's fire. So, there will be disagreements. There will be differences of opinions. We're all persons. We're all individuals. So we'll have a different perspective. That's normal. And even amongst friends, there may be a difference of opinion. But if we can maintain that basis of appreciation, of friendship, of seeing Krishna's hand in everything that happens to us. And of course, the association of the devotees is the means by which we can do that. We can actually see Krishna. Even when things are going against us, we still have to see, ultimately, that Krishna's behind this. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, Ushapati found me at the back gate, and he brought me upstairs, and he put me in the blue room actually that night, instead of sleeping in the Brahmachari Ashram. He said, "You can go and sleep here, and you can sleep for as long as you like. You don't have to get up for Bhagavati," which was like, "Ooh, okay, no worries." Doctor's orders. So anyway, Ushapati was actually a very good friend. He knew that I was struggling, because I didn't have any friends. I come to the Melbourne temple and I left my devotee friends behind in Adelaide. So actually was quite a... There was another occasion where I had a 12-string guitar. It was a Maiton guitar. I paid about $300 for it. In this day and age, it's a $1,500 or a $2,000 guitar. So one devotee came to the ashram and he said, and this happened to me more than once, this is a pretty good guitar. It's good to give in charity to the brahmanas. I said, oh yeah, okay, no worries. I'm a surrendered soul. So I gave him my guitar. And Ushapati found out. He said, "What? Where is he?" I said, "Well, he's just gone to the airport. He's going back to Sydney." So Ushapati jumped in the car, drove out to the airport, found that devotee, got my guitar and brought it back. So Ushapati was, in one sense, he was my protector. So we need a protector. We need to have the shelter of... We need friends and... we need somebody to protect us. We need protection. Ultimately, Krishna is our protector. But Krishna is very merciful in that he appears in the form of a devotee. Well, not in our case, most often not just as a devotee, but as the devotees. So if we can make friends with the devotees, render service to and with the devotees, then we'll be protected. Right, and that's just the first chapter. There's more. But anyway, we should finish, otherwise I'm going to get in big trouble. I'm already probably in big trouble. Kanjura Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jai.